Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Welcome back to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. There's a saying that men never want their wives to change and that the women always want their husbands to. This desire for change versus keeping things at the status quo, I think, is at the foundation of the ongoing tension in many marriages. And maybe it's the cause of tension in yours, too. And I know that many of my clients, and myself as well, walk this fine line between letting their hair down at home and just being themselves versus being the partner that their spouse wants them to be. And I've been reminded of this delicate balance twice in the last week. One of my clients actually stated that for years, he believed that being married allowed him to just be however he wanted to be, that he didn't have to hold his temper or be inconvenienced by helping out with the kids or doing something that was like outside of his normal mode of operation. And a second couple was having similar challenges with, one, his uncontrolled temper, but she also made the choice to consistently antagonize him. So neither one was actually able to be a good partner. And these examples to me send the message that once you're married, you don't need to make an effort anymore, that you got the prize and now you can just coast all the way home. But in reality, the exact opposite is true. You can be yourself, but you should strive to be the best version of yourself. Now, I get it. If you've been listening for a while, I've shared the story. You know, I've got a hot, fast temper, always have had. And several years ago, my wonderful husband said to me, "Honey, when you get upset, could you please not take a flamethrower to everything in your path?" Meaning, oh, him. I wasn't necessarily mad at him. I was just upset about something else. But he caught the crossfire. And what he was asking for was a reasonable request. He wasn't telling me not to get upset, because that would have been saying don't breathe. But he said, when I do, can I choose to handle it in a different way? And these are the things that we can ask our partners for. These are the changes that we can ask our partners for. But unfortunately, the way many couples handle this, their hurt, their frustration, their wanting things to be different with their partner, leads to fighting. And this becomes a tug of war over who's going to get the other one to change in the way that they want, instead of stepping up and taking responsibility for what you are bringing to the table. All of this fighting leads to distancing and then to the fulfillment of that old adage, familiarity breeds contempt. The contempt that's brought about by fighting leads to more hardened positions and more fighting. So joining me today to share how you can stop this unproductive pattern of behavior is Hal Runkle. He's a marriage and family therapist and the author of both Scream Free Parenting and, more importantly, the author of Scream Free Marriage. So, Hal, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Leslie. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, you know, I've told my clients and anybody who'll listen to me for years that disagreement in a marriage is a given. Disagreement in any relationship is a given. But fighting is a choice. And people look at me when I say that like I have three heads.
Right.
But I get the feeling that that's kind of at what you're at, kind of in your book, Scream Free Marriage. Am I even close?
Yeah, it's getting there. It's not, but I'll go a step further. It's not just that disagreement is a given. I believe it's a good.
Okay.
It's an inherently good process when we disagree. Because what conflict brings to us is that's how we begin to actually know each other. That's how we influence one another. That's how we learn from each other. There's a great line in that movie Fight Club where Brad Pitt's character says, how can you really know yourself until you've been in a fight? And it's
interesting.
Marriage is this crucible, right, that holds us in this kind of container of conflict because we're getting so close and making so many common decisions with someone who is other than us.
Right, and it kind of goes, one of the things that always internally kind of cracks me up, and I don't mean that disparagingly, but kind of more like a duh moment, is when couples come in and they tell me that they're different people. And my response
right.
is, in my head, is you've always been different people. Now it's just a problem.
Yeah. It's becoming a problem for you, but it's interesting. One of the phrases that a lot of people give when they're getting divorced is, well, we grew apart.
Right.
And my response is always, no, that would have been a good thing. For you to grow as individuals apart from each other is what your marriage has actually been missing. Because in the effort to join together as one, what we end up doing is sacrificing any parts of ourselves that might end up in conflict because we've been sold this lie that you're supposed to be in agreement. We say it this way, you're supposed to be on the same page, right? And then
right.
with your kids, you're supposed to represent a united front as if you were the allies against Germany.
It's this idea, and I guess it's at the heart of what I also hear all the time is the dependence versus independence. I have to kind of, I tell my clients, you can't be subsumed by the blob that's marriage. You still have to maintain your own personal integrity, and I don't mean that in terms of ethics. I mean that in terms of who you are as a person, and then find a way to work with your partner, not against them.
Absolutely. And so what we talk so much about in Scream for Marriage is this, how do you get to the place where you can fully represent your truest self to the other person without demanding that they automatically validate that and conform to it? I want to represent my truest self to my wife of 21 years,
mm-hmm.
and I want her to do the same, even if we're in disagreement. Because if we're not openly going to represent ourselves in that disagreement, then it's going to come out some other way, some unhealthy way. Because the reality is you can try to sacrifice yourself for the sake of your marriage, but that self doesn't die very easily.
And it shouldn't. I mean,
I
started out my career working in the domestic violence field.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw, with a client, I never saw when they were actually pushed to the edge of where they would have to really give up who they are, you know, give up their true selves to keep this relationship going. When they got pushed to that edge, that sense of personal survival, and I'm not talking about physical survival, I'm talking emotional survival,
sure.
kicked in,
sure.
and that's what got them out. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not going there. You've pushed
right.
me right to the edge. And luckily, at least the clients that I was working with got out. But it's this idea that somehow holding on to yourself and being married are incompatible.
Exactly. And that's the biggest lie that I believe marriages continually have to are faced with the choice. Am I going to believe this lie or not? It's the biggest threat is the idea that we, in order to get along, cannot fully be ourselves. And then we get resentful that the other person, if they really knew me, all of me, like the John Legend song, they wouldn't accept me. So I have to sacrifice myself in order to be married. And that is... what that leads to is the invitement of, I believe, the greatest enemy to marriage, which is resentment.
Right.
Like I hear a couple come into my office and say, hey, we haven't had a fight in 3 years. And I'm like, oh, my God, what's wrong?
Because, well, Now, I'm going to say my husband and I haven't had a fight. That doesn't mean we haven't had a disagreement.
Right, right. And I'd be like, well, I just hear the ticking time bomb in the background, right, that this is going to go off, because at
right.
least one of you have been stuffing some serious resentment. And I think it's a great English phrase, or an English word, resentment, because
yes.
you think about it, and I have this sense of injustice, right, this sense of incongruity or something carrying around with me, but I don't know how to accurately, authentically represent that to my spouse. So, and because I'm scared of conflict, I don't do anything about it. But what I do is I resend it through my brain every time I think about it. And I resend it through my brain every time I talk to my friend about it. And I resend
right.
it, and it has this amazing ability to turn into a resentment.
Right.
That eventually, my ability to hold it all back erodes, and then I explode, and maybe it's not till I file for divorce. I have a friend that came home. They've been married 18 years, and he came home, and the sheriff's outside his door. He's like,
oh my God,
something horrible happened with his kids, right?
No,
and,
he's just been thrown out of the house.
Exactly. And
yeah.
he's like, he came to me and said, we've never even had a fight.
And you said, therein lies the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I said, well, maybe you haven't, but obviously your wife's been having an internal fight for a long time. And usually what I've experienced, and I know this is true for you based on what you've already told me, is when couples divorce, it's not because I can't handle you. It's because I don't think I can be me and be close to you at the same time.
Well, and, you know, and I know you've been in the field for a long time. And as we were talking before we got on the recording, I met you many years ago at a conference called Smart Marriages, which unfortunately doesn't exist anymore. But
well,
this idea that we don't teach people that concept, I personally will never use the word sacrifice in the same sentence as marriage, but we have a bunch of people out there saying, oh, to have a successful marriage, you have to sacrifice. And I'm jumping up and down in my car going, no, don't
yes.
say that.
It's one of the worst things out there is the fact that we have to combat these lies that unfortunately have been offered out there by people in our profession.
I know.
You have to sacrifice. You, and here's the one I hear all the time. You have to compromise.
And don't use that word either.
Oh, it's one of the worst words, because what you're saying is, I will give up this part of myself as long as you give up that part of yourself.
Right. And then
so
both people lead to resentment. Yeah.
Exactly. You're agreeing to something only on the state that the other person is suffering as much on this agreement as you are.
Right. I always talk about, here are all of our options. Which one are we both going to choose that leads
right.
us in the direction that we want to go? Because in that case, there is no resentment. As I was talking about that when my husband came to me and made the request that he made,
right,
I could
right.
have chosen to say, you know, forget you, buddy. I'm just gonna be me. And you're just gonna have to deal with it.
Right.
Which was a legitimate option.
Sure.
I don't think
Absolutely.
It would have been the most productive option, because then that would have put him in the position of, okay, can I live with this? Or is this something strong enough? And I think that's one of the things that also gets people into trouble, because I tell people we have to have boundaries around ourselves, between us and our partner, about what we are and are not willing to accept. And that's where I think the compromise and the sacrifice causes problems, because we're being asked to accept something that we really can't accept.
All the time we are. And because we don't want to actually have a disagreement about it. What I've become to, and I hopefully am teaching the couples that I work with, is look, my wife and I have an uncomfortable conversation at least once a day, because we are no longer scared of conflict. We're no longer scared of conflict because we're terrified of resentment.
Oh, I like that. Oh, I really, really, I'm going to steal that.
Go ahead.
That is so true.
Right. I'm not afraid for us to disagree. I'm afraid for our disagreements to never see the light of day until we end it. You know, that's what happens. It's kind of like if you're working for a boss who never tells you anything that you never tells you anything that you're doing that is not in line with the best thing for the company until the year end review, and then
exactly. Unloads.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair. So it's simple things like, I love how you talked about your husband coming to you and say, when do you get angry? You know, this. It's recognizing, and this already happened between my wife and I this morning. Look, whether you make the bed is up to you.
Right.
In a pattern, whether you make the bed is up to you. You're a grown man. I'm not going to tell you what to do ever. And I have been over the years occasionally telling you this, and talking to you like I'm your mother. And I apologize
right. For
that. I should never tell you what to do. You're a man. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks. And then she says, now, I do need to express to you as a wife.
Right.
That when you choose not to make the bed in the morning, it makes it harder for me to want to climb back in that bed with you later that night.
Oh, nice way of phrasing that.
Exactly. Now, I'm not telling you what to do, but I owe it to you to authentically represent who I really am to you. Now, I'm not saying I won't get in the bed with you, but I am telling you that it's not attractive.
Well, and it's teaching people how to have that, because I get all the time, and I'm sure you do too, that, you know, I want to avoid conflict, and my response
right. Is
you can't avoid it. You're merely postponing it, and the longer you postpone it, the worse it gets and the harder it's going to be to deal with, like your friend who comes home and the sheriff is
yeah. On
the front lawn. And it's like, you know, and so I try to not use the word conflict. I try, you know, that's why I specifically say talking about we're going to disagree, because
right. Conflict
is such a loaded word. It doesn't
right. Sound
pleasant at all. It's also why I don't use the word work in relation to marriage, because it really sounds unpleasant. But you know, how do we teach people that it's actually better to deal with the conflict / disagreement than let it fester and become resentment?
Mm. We have to sell them on the idea that it actually gets them closer to what they want most. See, I'm always working with my clients, and we do this in the book, try to do this in the book, that I want you to be able to come to a realization about what it is you want most. Because failure in life happens whenever we sacrifice what we want most for
mm-hmm. What
we want right now.
Yeah.
For instance, one of the things I want most is a healthy, fit body that my wife still finds attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I want right now is a whole box of Krispy Kreme donuts.
Exactly.
Right. I'm a grown man, adult with money. I could do that if I want. But it's
right. Not
going to lead me to what I want most. And I think that's ultimately where conflict is it's within each of us, and
uh-huh. We're
faced with the choice of what I want now versus what I want most. And so what I want most is a healthy relationship with my wife, where we both feel our strongest with each other, and where we both feel very, very empowered to fully represent ourselves to one another, and that actually makes us both better. But what I want right now is for her to be quiet and just do exactly what I need her to do.
Right. Which then leads to that parenting in marriage where, you know, I'm not your mother,
yeah.
I'm not your father, but you know, but do what I say.
Do what I tell you to do. Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. And then it's never going to lead me to that adult to adult relationship that I crave most, where we are equals. Because here's the deal, I talk to guys about sex. It's certainly not always the guys who
mm-hmm.
want to have a higher
sex drive
than
mm-hmm.
the women. Yeah, I see it back and forth all the time. But like, you don't want to have sex, you want her to want to have sex.
Yes.
Right.
Goes back to that movie, I can't think, The Breakup. Where it's not only do I want you to do the dishes, I want you to want to do the dishes. And
exactly.
Why would I want to do the dishes?
Right. I can't force you to want anything. Now, the reality is you do want to do the dishes because you want to clean house. It's so funny when a guy will tell me, look, I just don't do dishes. I'm like, well, what are you going to do when you're in your tiny apartment by yourself?
Yeah, then they're just going to pile up in the sink. Exactly.
It's coming. It's coming. Right. The way you continue to live this way. Like, I like how you opened this thing. You were talking about, you know, once I got married, then I can just free to be me and do whatever I want. That, you know what? That's not being you. That's not being the true you. Is that the truest you? You are a slob. That the truest you is you have no accountability to anybody else, right? You don't care what anybody thinks. Right? That's not the truest you. What we do,
Is the truest you, if it is the truest you, then don't get married.
Yeah, you don't want to be married.
Right, right. So I just want to I just want to remind my listeners that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net, and I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with Hal Runkle, author of Scream Free Marriage. So I want to get on to, I want to talk about the book, and I want to talk about that concept of Scream Free Marriage. What do you mean by that?
Well, when we say scream, we don't actually just mean, you know, vocalizing out loud. And turning and Scream Free is not just about turning down the volume. Our first book, Scream Free Parenting, is about learning to calm your emotional reactivity in whatever way that comes out. Now, with parenting, it's a lot more common that we scream out loud. You know, I think there's a study that says 98% of all parents have unleashed an emotionally damaging outburst towards each of their kids before the age of five. And we know the other 2% are just lying about it. Right?
Yep. And I'm going to go on record. I've been one of those people.
Absolutely, me too. So it's easy to scream at our kids because we think we're responsible for them. And what that book teaches them is, no, you're actually responsible to them for how you behave, not responsible for how they behave. They are the ones responsible for how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in that book, you know, we were blessed. It became a bestseller. Then we created a nonprofit around it, all based on this idea that emotional reactivity is our greatest enemy. It's that knee-jerk, heat-of-the-moment snap that's not representative of the true me, but it's representative of my anxiety in the moment. And so applying it to marriage is, I've got to do whatever it takes, first and foremost, to be calm, because the last thing I want to do is lead with the most anxious part of me. And so, but unfortunately, it happens a lot in marriage. It's just not necessarily screaming. It can be, like we've talked about, the 4-day silent treatment.
Right.
Which is just
the stonewalling, the walling off, the withdrawing, or what used to be called passive aggressive behavior, where I'm not saying it directly, but I'm kind of stabbing you in the back as you walk through the kitchen.
Sure. I had a client not too long ago saying, "Oh, I could never tell my husband that I'm unattracted to the fact that he's gained, you know, 80 pounds." Oh, but you will refuse to have sex with him for 2 years.
Right.
That's another form of screaming. And so we take all these forms of screaming very seriously, because when we, quote unquote, scream in whatever way we get reactive, it doesn't just make things worse. It actually creates the very outcome we were hoping to avoid in the first place. I tell a story in the beginning of the book about my wife and I on our honeymoon. And on day 3, I finally actually realized I was married. And it was during our beautiful lobster dinner on the beaches of Hawaii in our honeymoon when it just hit me. And I'm in the middle of the meal, and I'm getting, honest to God, huge panic attack, sweats and heart palpitations, right, and the world closing in around me. And so I stood up and said the 4 worst words you can ever say on your honeymoon. What have I done?
Well, but at least you had the courage to acknowledge that, because I think a lot of people do exactly the same thing when the infatuation fades off and we're actually faced with the flesh and blood person
otherness
sitting across the table from us.
Right. And it hit me. But then what I did with that had no chance of actually succeeding. What I did was I took off. I just left. and ran out of the restaurant. And so one of the things to think about is it okay for me to want a little space from my spouse, even on my honeymoon? Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But is that reactive way, running away from the restaurant in the middle of a meal, is that reactive way actually going to get me the space that I want? No, because who was right behind me on the streets of Oahu, right?
Going, what are you doing?
Exactly. So it's the feelings that we have, anger, right? The feeling that your husband has towards you really just kind of bewilderment about your inability to, you know, control yourself, right?
Right.
With your anger. Those feelings are perfectly appropriate. It's how you represent those that will determine the course of your marriage. You know, are there going to be times when you're upset at your spouse? Absolutely.
Sure.
Like my wife upset at me about not making the bed. But
right.
How what she does with that, and that's what Scream Free Marriage helps you do. We've got a formula for when you are in this conflict, in this disagreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a process that you need to go through, and we make it very simple. It's just three steps. Calm down, grow
right.
up, and get closer.
Well, the first one is a challenge, calming down, because a lot of people don't know how to do that. The second
right.
one, though, grow up, is where I think we're really struggling as a society, both individually and collectively, because what does that mean to grow up?
Sure. You're right. We have a lot of different definitions of adulthood, and we don't know exactly what it looks like. And it's. I tell this story in the book about my wife and I moving across country, and my mom packed the boxes for us, and we were going to work for this Christian private high school here in Atlanta years and years ago, and the principal came to help us unpack.
Oh dear.
But we had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old at the time, so we had all these videos, right, back in the years ago. And my mom had put those in a box labeled children's videos.
Oh, dear.
But then all the other videos that belonged to my wife and I were put in another box and labeled adult videos. Right.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, you know, we were just thanking ourselves that he didn't find the adult toys box. We have this weird, you know, understanding of adulthood. Does that mean, you know, I'm a license to do whatever I want? And the way we define it is in Scream Free is adulthood means you take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You take responsibility for everything you do, everything you feel, right? It's yours. You think about it, responsibility is the opposite of reactivity.
Exactly.
And so adulthood means I have the ability, responsibility to respond, which means, you know what, I'm feeling this. It's not her fault. She did not make me mad. She does
right.
not have that much power.
Or the flip side is, I get this all the time, is it's my job to make my partner happy.
Yep.
You don't have that ability.
No, you don't have that much power at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's so horrible that there are books, bestsellers, right? There are people in our profession, there are clergy, right, that are saying that's absolutely the key, is you make each other happy. And
no.
As if that's actually possible.
And, yeah.
Instead of making yourself happy and sharing of yourself with that other person, then what they do with that is totally up to them. My wife
right.
could make me, she could lay out 20 hoops for me to jump through, and I could do them perfectly, and she could, at the end of the day, still be unhappy. And it could have nothing to do with me.
Well, and that's, and again, this is also the fallacy of perpetual happiness, is that
right.
happy is judged against unhappy. So if we're happy all the time, all we've done is just reset the thermostat. You know, it's by definition a contrast. And so this idea that we can perpetually be happy, even though, I mean, I use the phrase happily ever after, because I do think it probably should be successfully ever after, but that doesn't quite have the same cachet.
Sure.
but so why do you think we are having such difficulty as a society? Because you hear this all the time about everybody should take responsibility except when it comes to me, and then I'm not responsible. I get to have an excuse or blame or you know, the kind of nebulous apologies of, you know, things happened. It's like, well, things just didn't happen. You made choices that created those things happening.
Sure.
You know, mistakes were made. There's the one. Mistakes, like some nebulous entity out there made the mistake. No, I made the mistake. I yelled at my husband. I denied sex. I did this. You know, it, me. I got angry.
And that's the biggest hurdle that us professional helpers always have to try to help people overcome, is the willingness to focus on themselves and take responsibility for themselves. Because what we haven't done a good enough job is selling people on the idea of the beauty and freedom and joy that awaits you as you become an adult. Taking responsibility is not bad. It's not all negative feelings, right? There is an amazing empowerment that comes with that. I think, you know, in my faith system, at the end of the day, I'm going to have to come to a recognition that much more of my life was up to me than I thought.
And I think that's both empowering and terrifying at the same time.
I totally agree, which is adulthood, is both at the same time, right? Which is intimacy, both at the same time. You know, we want, we've been sold on this, you know, for the last 100 years, we've been sold on the promise of an easier life. That's what technology has continually promised to us, is an easier, easier life, rather than a stronger self that can handle whatever life comes at. You know, it's I want to be able to be strong and attractive physically without having to lift weights.
Right. And it's what I always run into when I talk with couples, because couples frequently will define what their perfect relationship will be about this closeness and feeling supported and feeling safe and feeling loved. And I said, yeah, you just described vulnerability. Bad word.
Right.
Because to be that close to another human being, we open ourselves up to being hurt.
No one can touch you like the one you've exposed yourself the most to, which is wonderful. But no one can hurt you like the one you've exposed yourself the most to.
I think that's the dance.
Yeah, you can't have one without the other. So what you have to recognize is safety is not something the other person provides. It's something you provide for yourself. Trust, I say this, trust is not the foundation. And if you're thinking that I have to be able to trust the other person, look, the only way you can trust the other person is to risk trusting the other person. And that's a difficult thing.
My viewpoint is that trust is really about you, not about the other person. It's do I trust myself to deal with whatever comes up? But we flip that to, well, you just have to do things that I find trustworthy. It's like not going
to
work.
Man, it's like you and I went to the same school. I've been saying the exact same thing. Look, the real trust that is a foundation is I trust that I'm going to be okay even if she rejects me.
Right. Because my partner will either knowingly or unknowingly reject me.
Yes.
And it's not going to be the end of the world.
Nope.
And it's actually okay, because in reality, if I'm honest with myself, there are things about my partner that I reject.
Sure. There's times when I unwittingly reject them, don't realize that's what I'm communicating, but I have.
Right. And it's defining what is okay and helping to educate my partner about, just like your wife did about the bed. You know, I get that this is how you feel, and that's wonderful, and you don't see the importance of making the bed, but this is the impact it has on me, and now you as a grown-up get to make a decision about what you want to do with that.
And here's the ultimate, I think, expression of that is I do not need my wife.
Yes.
She does not need me, and it's not our job to meet each other's needs.
I tell people that you have to want the relationship, not need it. Because if I need it, that's about me and my insecurities and my anxieties, and I'm giving you the power.
Yeah, exactly. I'm giving you the power over me. So I tell my daughter, she's 18 now, and she's been involved in a couple of relationships, and she's about to go off to college. And so I've told her all the time, look, if a boy comes to you and says, look, baby, I can't live without you, here's what you say. Well, it's a good thing my dad's a therapist because we can get you the help that you need.
I like that.
Because that's not romantic. That's diagnosable.
Right. I've just blanked on the name of the movie, but the You Complete Me. Jerry Maguire. Don't say that.
But that's every romantic song. I need you, baby, like the desert needs the rain. I need you. We use it as if that's what love is that we need each other. And you know what that is? That's a relationship like two ticks without a dog. Just sucking the life out of each other, right? Instead of, you know what, I'm a whole person and I'm going to share of that wholeness with my wife, who is working as a whole person, and she's going to share of her wholeness. Right?
Right.
And our marriage is not going to be only as good as our ability to equally, at the same time, quote unquote, meet one another's needs. I ask audiences when I speak to them, look, who's got daughters? You know, and they all raise their hand. And who of you is telling your daughter that what she needs most in order to feel secure as a woman is a man? And, of course, no one says that they're telling their daughter
hopefully
that.
They
would never dream of that. But as soon as she gets married, now she's supposed to communicate her needs to her man.
Right.
Like that's a step backwards in her personal development, getting married.
Well, I think, and maybe that's why people are so afraid of it, is because it is, what my listeners to take away is that marriage isn't just a relationship, it's an opportunity. Because we're all going to change over time. Nobody stays the same. Thank goodness I'm not the same I was at 19. But the question is, how do we change? And marriage presents us with the biggest opportunity to change by growing up and really becoming an adult, which I think is what's so scary about it.
It's the best way to find who your truest self is by living in close juxtaposition with another person who's also discovering their truest self.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give up the idea that we have to be on the same page, I tell clients all the time, look, the only page, the only same page you guys have to be on is the wedding certificate.
Right. And the commitment to being married and working through those differences.
And the reality is, though, you know this, and in therapy, is not everyone is going to be equally committed at the same time. That's going to fluctuate as well. What I have to concentrate on is me. Am I committed? Am I living up to my commitment? Am I willing to do this? Because there's going to be seasons where you're not even close to equal. Like when my wife, she's had cancer twice and gone through horrible bouts of chemo and radiation where she's not able to meet my needs. You know?
Well, yeah, her whole thing is just surviving. She can't do anything past that. Yeah. And then is somebody willing to step up and hold the fort, so to speak, while the other person is legitimately dealing with something else?
And I didn't ever view, and I stayed with her, obviously, but there's an 80% divorce rate of couples where one spouse gets cancer.
Which is really very sad. But again, I don't think we support the unit.
I agree.
That.
And I obviously had to make incredible, huge choices that were different than the choices I was making before. But never once did I ever view it as a sacrifice.
And that's the important part. And I'm so glad you used the word choices, because what I tell people and what I want my listeners to know is that the choices that you make each and every day will determine the quality and success of your marriage, well, of all your relationships, but of specifically your marriage. So, Hal, can you tell my listeners where to find Free Marriage?
It's available in bookstores anywhere, and all the online bookstores as well, and there's Kindle versions of it as well.
Okay.
It's all over. And but, you know, our website, screenfree.org, please go there. We've got hundreds and hundreds of articles and thousands of parents that you can link up with around, or parents and spouses and couples that you can link up around the world. And we've got
great
podcasts and lots of free resources. We're a nonprofit. Come enjoy, take what benefits you most, and disregard the rest. But screenfree.org is the place to go.
Great. So, listeners, join me next week as we continue our journey to great marriages. And, Hal, thank you so much for being our guest this week. And, listeners, until next week, stay loving.